Okay. I find it odd that there's a group of people who think that every day is opposite day. Zoe Quinn has released her book called Crash Override. You know, named after her failure of a attempt to help people who have been cyberbullied that ended up with people actually getting bullied worse on top of, you know, sexually harassed. Great job. Anyway, and I wouldn't call the book a powerhouse upon release. It's being listed as number one in social media guides on Amazon, but that's sort of like being the winner of a marathon when the competition is nothing more than snails and turtles and you're allowed to drive a Corvette. Quinn is being lauded as a hero by her Z-list celebrity friends, such as child molestation apologist and former NFL afterthought, punter, Chris Clue. Then you have the goony male feminist prototype, Will Wheaton, who's such a good feminist that he's been caught objectifying women on the Suicide Girls subreddit. He's got a thing for redheads with wide hips, so at least he's got decent taste. Anyway, my question is this. How is Zoe Quinn a hero when her most notable accomplishment is complaining about how mean people were to her on the internet in front of the United Nations, and in doing so, advocating for more restrictions on speech worldwide? Again, it must be opposite day. Because in reality, the type of person who does that is a sniveling coward who's afraid of other people's opinions. We'll be discussing Zoe Quinn's book and her insanity on this week's podcast, plus talking about the all-female Lord of the Flies. My name is Micah Curtis.
And I'm Malik Spellman, also known as the Hat Man.
And welcome to Micah and the Hat Man. Alrighty, so, still in Texas, feeling more muscular, so I'm wearing a tighter shirt. I've been working out like a madman since I came down here, so, and I feel better, and I've regrown the glorious beard of absolute victory, so I feel like myself again, and it's definitely been an improvement over the last, 6 months, that's for sure. Though I'm still kind of waking up. Because when you're out here on this sort of a job where you're working 12 hours a day, every single day, you have to be a robot. And your fuel is the drink of peace, Pepsi. This podcast not sponsored by Pepsi, even though I wish it was. We do, though, want to thank our patrons for giving us the victim bucks for supporting the podcast. Just before we get into this, I want to go ahead and put out the same cry that I did in the politics podcast. Is that, we do appreciate you guys being patrons. If you are not, please consider doing so. You'll get access to the Discord server, so you can chat with us whenever we're on there. On top of that, you'll get early access to these podcasts, to the videos, so on and so forth. So, we would, and not to mention, you'll help to contribute to the studio that we will be putting together. We're starting to buy the equipment for that now, or at least get the funds together. This work that I'm doing out here will help considerably with it, but every dollar helps. So, just so you know. So, on top of that, allow me to, goodness, my brain just went, I am in need of a good artist. So, if you have artistic talent, if you can do the drawings, please do me a favor. Go to my YouTube channel if you're listening to this on iTunes, or go to the, if you're already on the YouTube channel, then bully for you. Head over to the channel description page. There's going to be a business email there. You can send me an email. I want to see your stuff. I want to see how damn good you are, damn it. So, for a couple of reasons. First is for some image graphics for the videos that I do. And second thing that I also need to mention is that, if we start doing t-shirts in the future, whoever I pick will be the designated artist for those ideas. Of course, we will pay you. You will get a cut of those profits. and for designing the art that I need done for this channel. That is a paying gig. I will be paying you for it. So it's not for charity, so don't worry. So that's the long and short of that. So shall we go ahead and get into what we digested this week?
I suppose we shall.
Well then, Hat, I will let you go ahead and get us started with it.
Oh, lordy. So I watched a couple of fairly violent movies. But one of them I actually watched twice, because when I was spending time with some buddies on Saturday after work, since I didn't feel like going anywhere else at midnight, I mentioned just offhand Scarface. I was like, I forgot how good of a movie Scarface was. And buddy was like, hey, I've got it on Blu-ray. Let's watch it right now. So I literally watched Scarface twice in a week.
I see no issue with that.
The other ultraviolet movie, by the way, was Full Metal Jacket. So very very gory films, very obscene films as far as language goes, but still great, great movies. Scarface in particular, I think I'll choose to talk about. There was news fairly recently about a remake of sorts, which is kind of odd considering Scarface itself was a remake of an earlier film that was more about an Al Capone type character. And in this one, of course, you know, it's the Cuban Tony Montana, you know, political refugee. I do enjoy the line very much. I kill a communist for fun. Antifa, you're on watch. but no, I think it's a great movie about how if you don't keep your ambition in check, it can ultimately destroy you. I've even heard people say it's almost a political allegory in a way. You know, you come from nothing and gain the power that you've dreamed of, and then you let that absolute power corrupt you absolutely. Just it's an interesting sort of analysis on it too, because you know what Tony Montana does is absolutely illegal. I mean, getting involved in the cocaine trade, you know, killing people, brutalizing them. Yeah, that's absolutely. Not within the current laws here, but then you have some people like what's his name, that one cop that was telling him that he wanted to be paid off for in exchange for a couple of drug busts that he would let the police have. Like you know, that's a bit shady for a lawman, but you know, then again, if those corrupt politicians engage in similar behavior, then it's not not unreasonable to see it as a political allegory. Although, of course, I think House of Cards is a little bit better for that one. But I digress. No, I think as far as a character film, it's damn good. Of course. Wonderful acting all the way through, but
oh, absolutely.
The plot itself, I think, is of particular note.
Would you say that it's Pacino's best film?
Oh, that is. Oh man, that's a tough one, actually, because. The only other one that really comes to mind is The Godfather.
Well, there's Heat. There's Carlito's Way as well.
Yeah, but those don't have the same sort of acclaim.
They should, though, in my opinion. You know, and I know Godfather Part Two is considered the greatest film of all time.
Well,
for good reason. It is amazing. But I don't think it's just Pacino. You know, that's an that film had an ensemble cast. De Niro's in that too. So was Robert Duvall.
True.
Scarface is more of like a one man act in a lot of ways. He is easily the central figure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he wasn't Carlito's Way as well. In my opinion, Carlito's Way is a little bit it's a different type of story. Carlito's Way is a little bit more emotional based. Scarface kind of comes across like a weird Aesop's fable, like a really twisted one.
Mm.
You know, like you said, it's a fable about power.
Yeah.
And how that sort of power can corrupt people, and how ambition can kill you. You know, it's like and if you didn't know that before, like the last shot of the film should probably ingrain that in your senses.
Oh, but yes. Well, it's not even the last shot. That the world is yours theme appears multiple times. But I think, you know, it is the last shot really drives the point home. But yeah. there's also after he kills Frank. Mm-hmm. You know, that the world is yours blimp flies over like immediately afterwards. So it is a cautionary tale, of course.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, wonderful, wonderful movie. If you can stomach all of the violence in it. I know some of you out there don't have that in you.
Yeah, but some of you are going to be like me, and you think that that's tame. Because I honestly do. I don't think Scarface is that violent.
No, there's significantly worse. But as far as movies go, yeah, that gets up there. Just like I don't think Full Metal Jacket is really that violent either. I'd put it on about the same level as Scarface, but
yeah,
for some people they just can't stand it. So I gotta give them a warning.
I think that it has more to do with the tone than the violence itself.
Mm.
Because yeah, there are much more violent films. I mean, you look at you compare Full Metal Jacket to Black Hawk Down.
Mm.
Black Hawk Down is way more violent.
Oh yeah.
In regards to gore, but in tone, the tone of Black Hawk Down is sacrifice. Mm-hmm. You know people are going to die. You brace yourself for it. The movie has braced you for it. The tone of Full Metal Jacket is completely different. It's an anti-war film. So, not that I'm saying Black Hawk Down is pro-war. I'm saying it's pro-soldier.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we both need to say, just real quick on that film, Vincent D'Onofrio, Arlie Ermey. I'm of the opinion that you could have cut out the second half of the film and missed nothing in a lot of ways. I feel like the better points were driven home in that first half than the second half in regards to wartime and what, you know, what conditioning is. And there's a whole thing about like soldiers that I could go into. I've been reading Plato's The Republic this week, but that's not my thing that I'm going to talk about. Because that's not entertainment. You know, there's nothing entertaining about that book at all. It's just pure philosophy. So, and I find philosophy entertaining, but not everyone does. So, for me, though, this last week, I didn't have a lot of time, obviously, for much. But what I did, I was able to reread a few comic books. Specifically, there is an event going on in Marvel right now that is not Secret Empire. Secret Empire is done. Oh, and Mim Headroom, wherever you are at, calling you out, pal. Nuts. Whenever I get back to Illinois, you and I need to do a Secret Empire post-mortem together. Seriously. I think that'd be an awesome video for us to do. But anyway, because he's done a great... For those of you who have not seen Mim's channel and you're into comic books, go to Mim Headroom. He has been breaking down just about every single tie-in to Secret Empire. And he probably has a much better grasp of the event than I do. So definitely check that out. Anyway, the other event that is going on that kind of flew a little bit under the radar in regards to like pop culture attention, but fans have been loving it, is Edge of Venomverse and the Venomverse event that starts this month. The premise of it is that there are these beings called Poisons that are like anti-symbiotes that are going to be invading different universes trying to kill Venom symbiotes. So, not exactly like a super complicated idea, but what they've basically been doing with the Edge of Venomverse series is they have had each or different characters consume, or not consume, but taken over by the Venom symbiote and have told interesting stories with them. The first was X-23, or all new, all different Wolverine. I'm just going to say X-23 for the sake of, or Laura. Because here's the thing. I like the character of X-23. She's not Wolverine. Just doesn't have the same appeal. But X-23, right after she escapes the labs, it's a very young Laura. Then Gwenpool, which that Edge of Venomverse comic is hilarious. That was actually the one that got me into Gwenpool. And I know that a lot of people are probably going to get on me for liking Gwenpool because of the whole Heather Antos thing. Look, I don't care. I don't care. If the book is good, I'm going to read it. Third one was Ghost Rider, the Robbie Reyes version. That issue was kind of – it wasn't as good. It was okay. It was an interesting concept because it's – that alternate universe is very different than what 616 is like. The other ones have similarities to Marvel 616 that they're taking place in, you know, kind of a mainstream feel universe. The fourth one is Old Man Logan as Venom. And the way that it does, that one is probably the best issue of the five. Because that one, what it does is it explores the idea of what happens when Logan fights that... have you read Old Man Logan Hat?
I have not read it, but I'm aware of the story.
Okay. In the story, there is a T-Rex that is around. It's kind of, I don't know if it's like said to be Devil Dinosaur, because Devil Dinosaur has been around for a long time. But it's a T-Rex, basically, that has been possessed by the Venom symbiote. And in the comic, Logan kills it, and the symbiote goes after him instead. And now you've got Wolvenom, which is a concept that was actually first played around with by Daniel Way in his run on Venom, on the Venom solo series back in 02. And people have been fascinated with that idea ever since. Brian Michael Bendis actually, unpopularly, tried to put the kibosh on it. He did this story in Mighty Avengers where Dr. Doom released a symbiote bomb on New York. It was really – Mighty Avengers sucked. But Doom releases a symbiote bomb, and Wolverine is able to fend off the symbiote because he has a healing factor. Huh? Anyway, it's retarded. So the final one, of course, is Deadpool himself. And again, it's just five one-shot stories that are unique takes on those characters. And their particular universes. I don't know why, and this is a weird thing, the Robbie Reyes comic had like a Bomb Queen feel to it of unlaw, of, you know, lack of law. And if anybody's ever read Bomb Queen, it is probably the most obscene comic you're ever going to read outside of Crossed. But it's good for a little entertainment, if nothing else. But anyway, but it has that kind of a feel of lawlessness to it. So I'm really looking forward to the Venomverse proper. I think that the team that is working on Venom, the editorial team, probably the best editorial team at Marvel, and they are devoted to making good comics. That's one thing that I've followed them on Twitter and stuff like that. I've been reading some of the things that they're saying, and they're staying away from politics. They're staying away from anything like that. And I think that that's part of the reason that in the CO leaks that came out this week, the supposed leaks anyway, is that Marvel has big plans for Venom because it is a consistent seller. And people like the character, and that people like the way that it's going. So, because it's like, it's been well received. Venom is one of the few series that has been well received by both the comic book audience and comic book critics. Which, as of late, it's been either one or the other, because the critics are all progressive idiots, but the readers are not. So you're either gonna win one over, or you're gonna win the other over. But anyway, if you haven't, Edge of Venomverse has not been collected yet on Comixology. Let me check that real quick, actually. Other development, I have a brand new cell phone, so I have, like, room for apps. It's great. So let me pull up in Comixology real quick. And I'm going to hold my phone up so that people can tell that I'm working. So pull up on Venomverse. And, oh, I was actually incorrect. Edge of Venomverse has been collected on Comixology if you want to buy it digitally. The whole amount will run you, let's see here, about $25. So you get the main five books, and then you get a one-shot that I have not read yet. I will probably read tonight, called Edge of Venomverse War Stories Number 1. So, I would recommend it. I would say drop the scratch on it for sure. If you want to wait for the trade, feel free. But it is a great, great series. I'm very excited for the event. So that's what I digested this week. Since we've been talking about this for 20 minutes, let's go ahead and dive into the weekly wackiness. So Zoe Quinn.
Oh dear Lord, we actually have to talk about her.
Yeah, sadly. Well, let me put it this way. I think there's a positive to this, and I'm just going to get this out of the way before we go into the dirty details. I think this is the beginning of the end. Because if this book doesn't sell, and her game has no physical success, I think that the internet as a whole will just ignore her from this point forward. Because the thing about a lol cow is that they're only as good as long as they're producing laughs. When the joke wears out, they're done. And they're just not going to get any attention anymore. Like, who's paying attention to Allison Rapp anymore?
True.
So, unless, like, you're that thirsty and you're following her Instagram, which I am not. So
she has an Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Well, she's basically trying to go the Instagram model thing now.
Oh, dear God. That's going to backfire.
Probably. She's not that good looking. Not to mention the whole support of kidding diddling. That's kind of screwed up.
That, so, kind of?
Yeah.
Just a lot.
Anyway, so her book, Crash Override, has been released. And like I said in the opening monologue, it went to number one in social media guides. When you look at what social media guides are, it's like Twitter for dummies. Twitter for dummies isn't necessarily going to be moving a ton of copies. You know, it's like if that's what you're competing against and you're the only person being pushed in that category, of course you're going to hit number one. Like that's... I'm curious, and I could not find the stats of where she's selling in other categories that book applies to, or if she just requested that it be moved to there because that's the only place where she's going and she can say, oh, it's the number one seller. But anyway, so the book has come out. I have not read it.
I have not read it.
And I don't plan on reading it, because I don't plan on giving this woman any of my money. But we have some friends that have read it, specifically Mundane Matt. And he was basically blatantly lied about a few times in that book.
Oh, yes. As in, had he been outright named instead of being called... Little Blue Skull guy or something, it very well could have been actionable.
Mm-hmm. He would have had a rock solid defense, or he would have had a rock solid case. Some people have said that he probably should get a lawyer. But here's the thing, guys. He's got a baby on the way, and he's got a business that he's trying to start up.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
No, he doesn't. You know, he doesn't have that kind of scratch lying around. So I can understand why he doesn't want to pursue that sort of thing. Me, I'm a jerk. I don't have a child on the way or anything like that. So if I was in his position, like with my current position, like if or rather if it had been me instead of him, oh, I'd be suing the shit out of her. I would. It's like, you are not going to defame me for the five people that are reading this book. You know, but more, you know, it's the principle of the thing. Anyway, point being that with this book's release, there have been a lot of falsehoods in it coming from her. And my question is this. Do you think, because I'm not sure about this, that she actually thought anybody was going to believe her at this
yes.
point?
Yes. Yes. I do.
Expand.
She would not have gone this far if she honestly did not believe that people were going to disbelieve her or doubt her in any way.
Why do you think that she's so convinced that people are going to listen, though?
Because she has a... Her circle essentially is equivalent, from what I understand, to that of a cult of personality. It's people just constantly filleting her, just dying to compliment her, and it's all going to her head. And, of course, you know, being a narcissist doesn't exactly, well, I guess that technically would help her in her
ego quest. I was going to say, she fits the pathology of that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's a little, I personally think it's a little bit more than that, but I'll save theories for not serious business podcasts. But, I think it's the fact that she has been in this sort of environment for the last 3 years, and there is nothing that anyone can say that will convince her to step out of it for a nanosecond. No sense of self-awareness, I suppose. She's just perpetually right. Let's go back to a Scarface quote. In the context of Zoe Quinn. She always tells the truth. Even when she lies, she tells the truth.
Hmm.
Or at least she believes that she does. But we all know that's not the case. That is not the case.
No. I wonder if the reason for that is just because she is not willing to surround herself with anybody but sycophants.
It's possible. From what I remember of the Zoe post itself, she was constantly looking for, affirmation, validation. So this is that sort of neediness on, it's kind of an odd word choice, but a catastrophic level. Where, you know, if she does not have that, she would very likely have a massive emotional and mental breakdown. She's been put in this position by people who not only want to be in her good graces, but also want to use her as a symbol for their own moral crusades. So if she is turned on, if she is, you know, exposed as a liar and people not jump on board of that, but if they start to believe it themselves, even insofar as just questioning her version of the events, then she loses that base, and she would very likely lose her mind, too.
Hmm.
And that's... I've said this since the beginning. She's not one to be hated as much as she is one to be pitied. Because she has significant mental issues that I don't think she is willing to address. I mean, from what she says, you know, there are other things that she'll address, like depression, of course. And, you know, in all fairness, Depression Quest really did feel like a bout with depression, at least for me. It triggered flashbacks in me, for God's sake. That's why I said I'd never play it again, or go through it again. I'd use play very loosely here.
Yeah.
But I think she has a lot of mental issues that have not been addressed or properly diagnosed. If they have been, I don't believe she's doing anything about them. Perhaps it's denial. I don't know. But I think she needs treatment more than anything else, because this sort of behavior is not normal. This is absolutely not normal.
I'll leave it to the left to prop up the mentally ill as bastions of truth and justice. Hmm. But I think that where I am most where I find this comical is the celebrities that are trying to boost her up.
Oh, God.
I mean, like, Will Wheaton and Chris Clue have been kind of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think Wheaton actually put an Amazon review of her book out, didn't he?
They had... hang on, let me pull it up on the Amazon page. So it was an editorial review. Most of the people that appeared in her her Tingle video, if I remember correctly, I kind of purged that from my memory, were also listed on these editorial reviews. Let's see, or just names you might recognize. Not even that, just names you'd recognize. Lindy West. Do you know who Lindy West is?
I don't know who that is.
Lindy West is a regular contributor to The Guardian. She is a... oh, never mind. No, it's New York Times that she writes for. I believe she's contributed to The Guardian multiple times, too. Former staffer at Jezebel, fat activist,
ugh,
and I hope I'm getting this right, because if I get this wrong, I'm screwed. She was the one who started the "Shout Your Abortion" thing on Twitter.
Blech.
Yeah. Ellen Powell left a review. Known as Chairman Powell for the Redditors.
Ay, caramba.
There's Will Wheaton in there.
Of course.
There's Anita Sarkeesian in there.
Of course.
No mention of the fact that Feminist Frequency funds Crash Override.
Mm-hmm.
Graham Linen, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, writer and director of the IT Crowd, that guy who blocked everybody on Twitter. Those are the named ones. Kirkus Reviews left a review. Library Journal left a review. Publishers Weekly left a starred review. I'm not familiar with starred reviews, but
Well, one thing that I want to mention in regards to what Quinn is doing is, or really more than anything, that I've noticed is that the celebrity involvement has really done nothing for her. The video on YouTube for her game coming out called Tingle, I think it is, has like less than 5,000 views as of yesterday. And on top of that, no comments are allowed because everyone, I think that she is self-aware enough to know that if she lets people comment on that video, she will become a lol cow even faster than she already is one. On top of that, I think that there is a, I think it's not going to be long before all ratings are disabled. Because I really don't think it's entirely possible. I really don't think that she really wants people to be able to have a voice in this. She wants to get it out. She thinks that it's going to be successful for some strange reason. Yeah. It's idiotic.
Well, even the Amazon reviews, even. She's having negative ones removed. She's calling for them to be flagged as abusive on Twitter. And every single one of the verified purchases on Amazon, the reviews accompanied by a verified purchase, except for one, is a 5-star review. And it's odd because most of these were posted on the release date. So it
sounds like it's being cultivated.
It really does. It honestly does. The one review that was not 5 stars, that was still verified, was courtesy of Shoe on Head.
That's the one I was about to ask about, actually.
Yep. It was a 2-star review. And it is the one with multiple comments on it saying stuff like, you're relying heavily on Gamergate misinformation. If you fell for the flimsy ethics and journalism smokescreen, I'm very sorry, but you've been had. As a former Gamergater, you're looking back at it with rose-tinted glasses. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm curious because there were rumors that she had people that were a part of the Crash Override Network to help her edit this book for publication for free.
Yeah.
And suddenly a litany of 5-star reviews under verified purchase. I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it as well. And clicking through some of these people as well, they've only ever reviewed one product. There's a couple of them that have multiple reviews on there. But most of them are nothing. Nothing but this. Very curious. Very, very curious, to say the least. And I will say this. If there's a desire, if you guys really, really want me to read this and review it, tear it apart, like I've been doing with the Antifa book, as most of you are aware, then I'll do it. I've got Amazon credit, so it's not like I'm spending my money. I'm spending Microsoft's money. Because that's where I got the Amazon gift credits. Thank you, Bing. But nonetheless, if there is a demand, I will do it. begrudgingly, because honestly, I think it's a bad idea to give Zoe Quinn any more attention at this point. Because let's be real, that was the purpose of this book. More attention.
Yeah.
It says nothing about, at least I haven't read it, so I can presume it says nothing about game design, nothing about actually blocking people on Twitter or refusing to engage with the trolls. As in, one of the first rules of the internet, don't feed the trolls. And instead, it relies heavily on, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Exaggeration. But if you guys want me to torture myself, I'll do it. I'm sure it can't be worse than Revolution 60.
I don't know. I mean, this tingle thing looks like it could be the worst thing since Cheetah Men.
Oh, dear Lord. At least Cheetah Men had good music, though.
If you're drunk.
Look, I enjoyed that music, and I enjoyed all of the Cheetah Men and Phoenix Wright mashups that came as a result of it.
Yeah, anyway. Let's go ahead and move on, because I think that we've given this... Like, this is a
too much attention.
This is a dumpster fire.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is Zoe Quinn with a cup at a burning house going, this is fine. Alright. So, second thing we wanted to touch on before we do have a question today.
Oh, we do?
Yes. Just one. But,
fine by me.
So, all women... An all-woman Lord of the Flies is in the works.
Oh, Lord.
And to my shock and awe, it's not another season of Real Housewives. Because I was pretty sure that that's what the all-female Lord of the Flies was in the first place. But... Of all the stories to make all female, I can't think of one that would be worse. Because for those of you who have read or have not read Lord of the Flies, you should read it. Because it's a great, great story. But holy mother of God, if this is a... this is not going to make women look good. Let me just put it this way. All female Ghostbusters I could get, the whole girls can kick ass too. Whatever. The movie flopped, and we all know why. All female Lord of the Flies is going to make so many dudes question dating forever. They're going to be like, I really don't know if I want to get involved with women anymore. I might just turn gay, if possible. Can I do that?
I mean, I guess. Apparently everything's a choice now.
Yeah. Just be a top for the rest of your life. But, but anyway. Wow. There is no way... that you're going to make womanhood look good. But what I've found funny has been the response to it. Like, there was one guy on Twitter that said that, oh, women will just... female Lord of the Flies, they would survive. They would get through the situation with no problems. I'm like, dude, have you ever met women? Like, this... Like, the single most manipulative... and sometimes evil things that I've seen done from one person to another in just normal relationships have been done by women. There's a joke by Louis C.K. And a lot of Louis C.K.'s jokes are funny because they're true. He says, men will hit each other. You know, it's a physical thing. You get over it and you move on.
Mm-hmm.
Women will shit in your soul. Man, it's true. So, I don't know. Is there a worse story to make all female than Lord of the Flies? That's my question.
Lord of the Flies is... Do I want to go full English major on this, first off?
You got about 10 minutes to do so.
Oh, lordy. Okay, so... Lord of the Flies is one of those books that deals with the human condition, of course. What do we act like when the entire world is shattered around us? You know, what is in the pit of our souls? And it, in a way, argues that humans are going to fail at being decent people at the end of the day. It's been argued that this is more of a masculine thing than anything else, as Lord of the Flies has very, very masculine themes. I mean, it's all boys on this island, of course. You know, they kill animals, which is considered a sort of rite of passage in some cultures. And of course, the ending. God, what was the line? He talks about the end of innocence,
mm-hmm.
I believe. So you can put forward that this is, you know, about the struggle of becoming a man, addressing masculinity, putting that into the context of a female cast. You would have to appropriately shift the narrative to make it about femininity. That doesn't work with typically masculine traits of violence and conquering, as the, you know, the boys separated themselves into tribes and, you know, one sought to conquer the other. It wouldn't be as outwardly violent. The whole Real Housewives analogy isn't really that far off, because if we want to go into stereotypes, you know, women are more manipulative. You know, they will stab each other in the back, but they won't typically be outwardly hostile towards one another. It's more of a passive-aggressive sort of thing. That, in the idea of this would be a feminist movie, is a terrible, terrible idea. If anything, exploring the themes that Lord of the Flies did with an all-female cast would only be seen as making a movie that, I guess, defends, if not outright moralizes, misogyny. And dear God, I almost want to see it made, if only for that backlash. But at the same time, it would be losing the entire meaning of Lord of the Flies. Although, I guess you could explore some themes like governance, civilization, you know, the democracy versus anarchy. But I don't think you could feasibly do it with boys and girls, but I don't think you could do it with just girls and have the same message and avoid criticism for its portrayals on top of all that.
Oh yeah, this is gonna fall flat on its face. It's either gonna be so bad it's entertaining, or it's just gonna get panned everywhere. There's no upside.
Think also, Piggy. They're going no. They're if they play it like Lord of the Flies, they're going to kill the only fat woman on the island. Imagine the backlash.
She should be played by Amy Schumer, just saying.
Ouch.
Anyway, let's go ahead and I think it's safe to say that yeah, this is heading nowhere good. But
this is a terrible idea as a feminist movie and as a adaptation in general.
Yes, to say the least. All right, let's go ahead and get to the one question that we have for the Q&A this week. So Spurgzilla asks, if we had to pick a game journalist for each of the seven deadly sins, who would you pick and why? All right, so let's go ahead and outline seven deadly sins for those who don't know. So you've got gluttony, greed, wrath, sloth, lust, and there's two others I'm forgetting.
Greed, wrath, lust, sloth. Gluttony, you said gluttony. Envy. And, well, God, maybe we don't know, too.
Well, I have went ahead and brought them up. So we got lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, pride.
Oh, pride. Pride is the last one, that's right.
All right, so let's go ahead and go down the list. Lust, Nathan Grayson.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that one's pretty apt. It's because his pecker got him in trouble, and it basically what little reputation he had, he ruined it by having sex with Zoe Quinn and not disclosing. Gluttony, Jim Sterling. That's a dead fucking
as if, as if friend. There was anyone else. As if there was anyone else.
Yeah, I don't think you could. I don't think you could. Greed. You could put
that was
so many of them in there. So who is the greediest of them all? Who is the biggest attention whore when it comes to game journalism?
I mean, I guess if you wanted to devolve into full meme, you could say Jeff Keighley, because Doritos Pope. But I don't really think he would serve it anymore.
I actually don't hold that against Keighley.
That's why I said meme status.
Yeah, let's say meme status is out of context. You listen to what he says about why he did what he did, and it makes sense. He was actually trying to improve game journalism by going for those kind of sponsorships as opposed to actual game sponsorships. It was a smart idea in the long run. But people don't think, so... Who is the greediest? You know what? Let me make an argument for this. In my opinion, one key element of greed is how quickly somebody is willing to throw a friend under the bus to preserve themselves and their own money-making. In that case, I would say Greg Miller. Because of what he did to Colin Moriarty.
Hmm. That's not a bad one.
Sloth.
All right. Who did the preview event for Rock Band 4 for Polygon?
Colin Campbell.
Sloth.
I would agree with that too. Probably the laziest game journalist out there. He doesn't want to be involved in it. He just does it for cash. He's lazy. Wrath.
Ben Kuchera.
That's what I was about to say too. He is the most reactionary person when it comes to games journalism. Easily, everything he does is just pure moral outrage. There's no logic to it. There's no nothing. It's just ranting. He doesn't do anything with thought. He's not a smart person. So it's like you don't expect it, but even then, it's purely emotional coming from him.
Not to mention he tried to get that one guy fired on Twitter, too.
Yeah.
From a
job at Dick's Sporting Goods. It's like, dude.
Yeah.
Really? Envy. Now, the big thing is that a lot of people within this, I think you could qualify that we've already mentioned, because a lot of people that seem to go after game journalists with such fervor oftentimes are jealous of their success. I think that's the case with a lot of these folks. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, the most envious, I think that this it's his driving motivation for why he does what he does, is Matt Lees. I can't think of anybody who will turn on a developer quicker just to make himself look better than Matt Lees. And I think that reason being is he wants what they have. And he won't admit it.
Not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. I'm trying to think of some other suggestion, but I don't have anything, so I guess we will defer to that one.
And Pride? Leigh Alexander.
Absolutely. I am games journalism.
Oh, yeah. And Pride goeth before a fall, and nobody in games journalism has fallen harder than her.
Mm-hmm.
And she deserved every second of it. So, yeah, I think that answers it. So, yeah, just to recap. Lust, Nathan Grayson. Gluttony, Jim Sterling. Greed, Greg Miller. Sloth, Colin Campbell. Wrath, Ben Kuchera. Envy, Matt Lees. Pride, Leigh Alexander. The seven deadly sins of game journalism.
There you go.
All right. So that's all we have for questions this week. Just again, before we close out, I want to thank everybody for who is a patron for becoming one. Please, of course, do consider becoming one yourself. $1 will get you early access to videos on top of being able to join the Discord server, which we'll be talking in much more often. We're also, while I'm out here, we're going to try to do more like late night Q&A stuff if at all possible. So if you just want to ask me questions and that sort of thing, we'll have ways of doing such things. So, any closing words, Hatman?
Not this time. I don't have any closing words this time.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I just want to say that I'm very happy that we still get to do this podcast while I'm out here, and that we have now we have a way of doing it. So, all right, folks. Well, with all that said, my name is Micah Curtis,
and I'm Alex Baldwin, also known as the Hat Man.
And we will see you guys next week.
Deus vult.